You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although we get vitamins and minerals from the foods we eat every day, many people are concerned that they're not getting as much as they need and supplement their intake with a wide range of pills. But how effective are those pills? Well, joining me now for today's Please Explain segment are New York Times Well columnist Tara Parker Pope. She's written extensively on what the research reveals about the efficacy of supplements. And Dr. Gary Deng, a researcher and physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering's Cancer Center's Integrative Medicine Services. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Did you have to work for an organization that has so many difficult words in it, Dr. Deng?
No. This is a long name, yeah.
But you're also involved with About Herbs, which is the website from Memorial?
Correct. We have an integrated medicine service because a lot of cancer patients are very interested in the use of natural products, vitamins, supplements, herbs. And we all know some of them may be helpful, some may actually be risky under circumstances. So we try to summarize what we have learned from research findings.
Well, can we go to basics?
Yeah.
Don't vitamins fall into two categories, fat-soluble and water-soluble? Which are which, and what's the significance of what makes them soluble?
Yeah. It's the vitamins you're talking about are the common vitamins, A, B, C, D, and E, and so on. They are divided into two groups because of based on their chemical structures. Some are, we call the lipophilic, which means they dissolve in fat, such as vitamin A, E, and D. Some are more water-soluble, like vitamin C, and B is in both. So, but that doesn't tell us much about what they do or they don't do.
Well, the fat-soluble ones can remain in the body, and if we take too many of them in our food, they can still work the next day. But the water-soluble, they just leave the body when we urinate?
Yes, correct. In many cases, in most cases, that's the case, because the fat-soluble ones tend to get stored in the fat tissue we have.
Is that always a good idea?
Depends on how much, you know. If too much of a good thing is always a bad thing. So if you're overdosing, we have seen people getting too much vitamins, and then they actually have side effects.
Tara, vitamins are organic substances made by plants and animals, and minerals are inorganic elements that come from the soil and water and are absorbed by plants or eaten by animals. When did these natural things begin to be manufactured in pill form?
Well, we've known, you know, for quite a long time that, you know, vitamins are essential nutrients. I mean, we need them, and we get most of what we need from the food supply. But there are certainly, you know, over the past, you know, 50, 60, 100 years, I mean, there have been all kinds of discoveries about what benefits us, you know, what we need and what we're missing. You know, we know vitamin C deficiency is linked to scurvy. You know, more recently, there's been a lot of data on vitamin D and rickets and breastfeeding babies. And you know, even though rickets sounds like something from, you know, 100 years ago, it's very current. A lot of babies in urban communities are at risk for this. So, you know we need vitamins, and, you know, they are essential. The question is whether taking a supplement in pill form is doing you good if you don't have a known deficiency. You know, if you have a deficiency, if you're, folic acid for pregnant women, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to take vitamins. But the question is we have a lot of consumers just gobbling down huge amounts of these, and is it really benefiting them?
And what kind of testing and research has been done to find out whether they have any benefits?
Well, there's so much data out there right now. You know, it started really with a lot of observational data. We started seeing that in large groups of people, vitamin users tended to be doing better, more healthy, less heart disease, less cancer. But the question with that is always, are vitamins really helping these people, or is it just that healthy people take vitamins? It's the healthy user effect. So there have more recently been a lot of clinical trials that, you know, started maybe 10 years ago and are just coming to fruition and really testing the hypothesis. If you take large doses of vitamin E or, you know, antioxidants or calcium, are we seeing a benefit, you know, over just the general population? And that data has been really disappointing.
The supplements contain both vitamins and minerals. Do they work in the same ways?
Obviously, you know, the mineral, you know, the calcium metabolism and the vitamin metabolism, it's all different. And, you know, but the question is that when we take these vitamins and minerals from foods, they work in a very complex way. They interact in our body. The question is, when you isolate these compounds, when you isolate vitamin E, vitamin C, you know, I know Sloan Kettering has done many studies on vitamin C, looking at how it interacts with cancer cells and tumor cells and mice. And, you know, I think that we need to kind of respect the fact that these plants have evolved this way for a reason. They're incredibly complex. And when you ingest the whole plant, you get one benefit. And when you just take an isolated nutrient, you know, it's a reductionist approach that hasn't really panned out.
Now, Dr. Dang, earlier this month, researchers in the Women's Health Initiative study found that multivitamins don't benefit women as many have thought. Can you explain that study and the findings?
Yes, because a lot of people are taking vitamins hoping they can help prevent, for example, cardiovascular disease or cancer. But those studies were done in a so-called observational studies way, which means they look at a group of people, how much vitamin they're taking, and their health a number of years later. And in that case, sometimes you see things that are not there. Because as Tara said, maybe these are just healthy patients, healthy people taking more vitamins, but you cannot contribute their health to the vitamins. So what they did is the so-called randomized controlled trial, which means they take a group of people, actually thousands of people, and assign them by chance to two groups so that they basically do everything else the same, except one group will get the vitamin supplements, the other group will get placebo. By doing this, you can be certain these two groups of people are essentially the same. The only thing that's different is whether they're taking the vitamins or not. So this way, when you see any results, it's more likely than not what the result you see came from taking the vitamin supplements. So that's how the studies were done. What's great about this study is that it was done in a large number of people so that the results you see are more likely to be real than just from chance. And also, they follow these patients for a long time, for 8 years. And that will also pick up some minute difference that can only show up when people are taking these supplements for a long time. We all know if there is an effect, the effect of supplements or vitamins are probably going to be small and cumulative over the years.
But, Tara, studying vitamins is not the same thing as studying some other drug, because we're taking vitamins in our normal diet as well. Doesn't that confuse a study?
Well, this is really the big problem right now with vitamin research, and that we're applying a drug model to the the vitamin business. And the question is this the right design for these, you know, supplements? And some people would argue that yes, it is, because the question is, are when you use these supplements in large doses in the real world, are you getting a benefit? And so in that sense, maybe this is a useful model. But the reality is that if you're doing, you know, for instance, in the Women's Health Initiative trial of calcium, which found overall there was no real benefit of calcium use. You know, there was some subgroup analyses that had different that suggested some benefit, but the overall trial found no benefit. But the problem is that when you really looked at the women in that trial, you had a lot of women in the placebo group taking calcium on the side or consuming a lot of dairy. We see this in the vitamin E trials, you know, prostate cancer, the selenium and vitamin E trial. The question is, how much natural vitamin E were the men in that trial getting? Were there, even though it was a randomized trial, were they perhaps more health conscious and eating more fruits and vegetables? You know, they knew they were in a prostate cancer trial. And so are we seeing that there's no real placebo group in these? You can't deny people vitamin E or calcium. You can't. They're essential nutrients. So we don't have a true placebo group. But that's the dilemma with this kind of research.
My guests are Tara Parker Pope of the New York Times. She writes the Well column, also blogs the Well blog, and Dr. Gary Deng of Memorial Sloan Kettering. Dr. Deng, haven't doctors been advising their patients to take vitamin supplements as a way to help prevent chronic disease or prolong life?
It depends, because initially there are some initial data showing, for example, selenium and vitamin E may help prevent prostate cancer. So at that time, some people recommended, some doctors recommend that. But to know that for sure, they have to do these large-scale definitive trials, and unfortunately the result was negative. They didn't see such a benefit. So now I think nobody can say for sure if you take these vitamins, you will be able to prevent cancer.
Tara, you wrote about the Women's Health Initiative study and other studies in your February 17th column. What kind of reaction did you get from your readers?
Well, every time I write about vitamins, it's the same reaction. You know, people really want to believe that vitamins help them, and they do believe it. And I understand that. I mean, there's a very cynical attitude about the, you know, drug business and about the medical establishment, and this is something people can buy themselves. It's an empowering thing, and they feel a real benefit. And part of the reason I think people feel a benefit is because there really is a healthy user association. Once you invest in vitamins and you start taking handfuls every day, you have an overall greater sense of your own health and wellness. You start exercising, you eat better. So these people probably do feel better, but is it really from the vitamins? I mean, there's a lot of resistance to this data.
Now, vitamin C is one of the most popular vitamins for people to take. Kids love them in chewable form. Did that all begin when Linus Pauling began touting vitamin C's benefits in the late 60s?
Well, he really started the interest. I mean, there was some people that were interested before, but he really raised awareness of it. And that really is the beginning of this whole mega dosing movement, the idea that, you know, huge amounts of supplementation can have almost a medicinal or therapeutic effect and help you improve your health. You know, the large doses of vitamin C, you know, a lot of the promise that Linus Pauling talked about, it hasn't panned out, but if you talk to consumers, they are convinced that their large doses of vitamin C are what's keeping them healthy.
And he made all sorts of claims, didn't he, Dr. Deng? He said that it could be used in for forms of mental illness. He was talking about orthomolecular approaches. You had to find the right molecule for the right condition, but vitamin C seemed to be his drug of choice. He wrote a book called Vitamin C and Cancer that claimed that high doses of vitamin C might be effective against cancer.
Exactly. I think we have to distinguish between beliefs and reality. You know, of course, we all want to have something that works that good, but so far, if you look at the evidence base and the research data, it has not supported such a miraculous property of vitamin C. Of course, it is helpful for people, especially who are deficient, but I don't think a megadose of vitamin C will give that many health benefits as being claimed.
Tara, have they looked at cancers with people who've taken a lot of vitamin C?
Well, there have been a lot of studies in animals and in test tubes, basically, where they have looked at the effect of vitamin C on treatment, on tumors in mice. You know, it's interesting. Memorial Sloan Kettering, in fact, did a study recently where it tested a number of chemotherapeutic agents like Gleevec and chemotherapy, and they tested them. They treated cancer cells with vitamin C, and they found that once the cancer cell was treated with vitamin C, it resisted the treatment. And this has really important ramifications for cancer patients, because I think there's this firm belief that vitamin C is good for us and keeps us healthy and sort of, you know, coats our cells with wellness. But if you think about it, you know, tumor cells also benefit from vitamin C, from vitamins. Tumors...
You mean we're feeding the tumor?
Well, this is the question, and there's certainly that suggestion in the animal data, that if you look at a tumor, there are high levels of vitamin C's in tumor cells, and the uptake of vitamin C is faster. They compete with tumors compete with healthy cells for vitamin C, and it clearly provides tumors some resistance to chemotherapy. I think we need to think about, there was a study, University of North Carolina, I think, in mice that looked at cell death, and it basically gave some mice normal diets and some mice vitamin-depleted diets that were very low in antioxidants. And actually, those mice did better. You know, they had smaller tumors. There was more cell death. I mean, antioxidants can be pro-oxidants, and that's the real issue.
When we take them as pills or when we take them in our normal food?
Well, that's the question, and the doctor may want to talk about this because, you know, we have large groups of people who benefit from diets rich in fruits and vegetables, but we have to believe, you know, this is a complex biological process. Why do we really think that we can reduce it down to one single component and that's going to translate into a benefit? Food is much more complex than that.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll go into those complexities and take your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. If you want to speak with Tara Parker Pope of the New York Times, she is the Well columnist at the newspaper, and with Dr. Gary Deng, a researcher and physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center's Integrative Medicine Services. Our number again, 212-433-9692. We'll be back with them and your calls after this. We're back with Dr. Gary Deng of Memorial Sloan Kettering and Tara Parker Pope of the New York Times. She writes the Well column for the newspaper. And we're talking about vitamin supplements and which ones are valuable, which ones are not, when you might need them, when you might not. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. I have lots more questions, but I think that perhaps it would be best to simply go to some of these listeners and see what our listeners are thinking. And we start with Andrew from Manhattan. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you? I'm listening to the segment, and it seems like I don't agree with some of the things that are being talked about. We live in a city where life is very fast-paced. You look around, you wake up in the morning, and you see people lining up to get their bagel and their coffee. Lunchtime, people lining up to get their pizza and their cheeseburger. People getting home late, not having time to eat dinner. This city has terrible, terrible eating habits. To me, these people need a supplement, and I think that's what vitamins are. They're supplements. Taken right, they can be good for you. I've taken vitamins for years. My friends, I know a lot of them, taking them for years. You know what? I haven't gotten sick in years.
Dr. Deng?
So my point in being is that if you take a vitamin, even if it's not helping you as much as you think it is, if it is actually making you feel better psychologically, that it's going to make you go out there and work out and do good things, then, you know what, by all means, continue taking that vitamin. But I think in a city like this,
We got it, Andrew. Dr. Deng?
Yes?
Do you want to respond to that?
Sure, Andrew. I think, you know, we all want to get healthier and feel better, but sometimes it's not what we do that will make us healthier. It's what we do not do. For example, you mentioned, you know, people eating bad diet, they are always under stress. You know, these are the things that we can avoid, we'll find ourselves feel better. So it's not just we want to take one more thing, we want to take a magic bullet. On the other hand, you mentioned, you know, it does give people a psychological benefit. You feel like they're doing something for their health. I think that's good, but that's probably not enough. I think we should focus on eating a very healthy, balanced diet and try to lower our stress level, make sure we exercise every day and stay fit and all these things. And one thing I found the most important is to get enough sleep every day. And that probably does more help to our health than anything else. In terms of this diet, in the terms of the vitamins, and, you know, if you take a lot of vitamins, if you don't have a healthy diet, if you take a multivitamin, that may be helpful because you're short on certain particular components. But if you eat a healthy diet, I don't think you need extra vitamins in this case.
Tara, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's just no evidence that taking a multivitamin compensates for having a poor diet. So I think your listener is absolutely correct. A lot of people do have very poor diets, but taking that multivitamin is not going to change that or make a difference or make up for it. And that's the problem. We think we can find health in a pill. We can't spend the money on something that will really help you. More fresh fruits and vegetables, a gym membership, that sort of thing.
What about omega-3 pills? Are they beneficial?
I don't know if Dr. Deng wants to respond to that. I mean, there's definitely some evidence that there might be some benefit. I don't think we have the full data. I think there's what I find interesting about fish oil in general is that it's more of a whole food, and that's sort of the direction people are going. You know, they're looking at whole berry extracts or whole tomato extracts because you get to capture the complexities of the whole food, and there may, you know, there's not data on that. There are not data on that, but, you know, Dr. Deng, what do you think about omega-3s?
There's some data showing omega-3s are good for the cardiovascular system, especially your lipid profiles. So if you do have, for example, high triglyceride, omega-3 has been shown to lower that. On the other hand, if you're taking blood thinners or you have a bleeding tendencies, if you take too much omega-3 fatty acid, you may actually bleed more easily. So I suggest you to discuss with your doctor or other healthcare professionals to see whether it's appropriate. But in general, omega-3 appears to be helpful, especially for people with cardiovascular risks.
But the thing is that it's so simple to get that in your diet. I mean, one serving of fish a day, you know, one or two servings of fish a week has a profound, you know, effect if you look at groups that eat, you know, small amounts of fish. And so I think it's easy enough to get that in your diet. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Deng?
Yes.
Is getting extra iron or vitamin D from fortified food any different from getting it in a pill form?
I think actually getting extra iron could be quite harmful, because unless you're losing blood chronically, for example, you have heavy periods or you're losing blood from your digestive tract, you're not iron deficient. You're not short in iron. And taking too much iron can make you so-called iron overloaded.
So geritol and I don't know if Seroten is still made, but that's really not recommended?
Taking extra iron at a higher dose?
Especially for older people. That's what they used to recommend with geritol.
I don't think it's for people who are not short on iron or losing blood, they shouldn't take extra iron, especially at high dose. If you were talking about the dosage in the regular multivitamin, the regular dose multivitamin, I don't think it would be harmful.
Two quick things about iron. You know, women in the reproductive years are those at risk for, you know, low iron, and about 15% of those women, you know, that's a conversation to have with your doctor. My concern about iron is that iron supplements, if you talk to the poison control, you know, this is the most dangerous poison. This is one of the biggest reasons children die, because iron supplements look like M&Ms. They look like candy. It is a deadly, deadly problem. So I personally, with a child in the house, would not have iron supplements in my house unless I had a real medical need for them.
When we get vitamin D in our milk, is that good?
This is a big question. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Dang. I mean, this is the big question right now, is are the levels of vitamin D that we are getting from foods and that are recommended by federal health officials, is it adequate? And that's a really exciting area of research that probably I would think Dr. Dang could comment on.
Yeah, I think initially the milk was fortified to prevent vitamin D deficiency. So they set the bar pretty low in terms of what's considered as normal vitamin D level. And there's some recent research suggesting a higher vitamin D level may be associated with additional health benefit. There's some preliminary data suggesting it may be associated with lower cancer risk. But be careful here. We're talking about association, not a causal relationship. That doesn't mean if you have a lot of vitamin D, you're going to prevent cancer. There's active research ongoing right now. For example, in Harvard University, they're doing research to test that hypothesis. And so I think the best thing to do now is to have your vitamin D level checked, or for people who are living in the indoor a lot, you're probably vitamin D deficient, and you can take a little bit more vitamin D, but don't take a high megadose vitamin D, because anything at high dose, overdose range can be harmful.
Well, how are the recommended dietary allowances, the RDAs, actually determined?
That was determined, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's determined based on the statistic analysis of the blood level in the population, and they set a range that will give you the general population this range of blood level. But I think that's a moving target. There's no definitive answer to that, you know, what consists of high and low, and that's a moving target too. With more research data, that number may change.
Well, let's look at some of the other research before we go to some more calls. Haven't early studies of vitamin E supplements showed that they were good for us?
Yeah, you know, the initial work on vitamin E suggested that there was a great heart benefit there, and there was a lot of excitement.
And it would lower the risk of prostate cancer.
I have to say, I personally find this heartbreaking, because the selenium and vitamin E research was so promising. You know, there were some studies of beta-carotene and a melanoma study that some secondary data suggested in those studies that the original, you know, the beta-carotene, there was not the benefit to smokers and that they were looking for with the original supplementation, but they started to see a selenium E effect with prostate cancer, and it was really pronounced, and it was very exciting, and that prompted the largest ever clinical trial, the SELECT trial, of vitamin E and selenium. And there was so much hope in the prostate cancer community, because men really do need solutions and a better way to prevent this terrible disease. And this data came back and just, you know, disappointing. There was no benefit.
Let's take some more calls. We go now to Jay from Plainfield, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Great, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment, and then maybe the guest could respond. I've been a big fan of Linus Pauling for many years, and I trust Linus Pauling, who has been a two-time Nobel Prize winner, and I think widely recognized as a genius in the field of biochemistry. But I don't necessarily trust medicine today due to conflicts of interest, and seemingly the profit motive has had too much of an impact on what is and is not accepted.
Wait, can I ask you a question? Because I'm always confused by this argument, and that is, aren't the people who are making the vitamin supplements interested in the profit motive? It's just a matter of whether your dollar goes to one guy or another, or it doesn't go to anybody. Isn't that the way it works? I mean, if you were to buy a lot of oranges instead and eat oranges, wouldn't orange growers be making money?
Sure, but the way I view it is, if you understand the margins involved, there's massive profits and massive amounts of money involved in patented pharmaceuticals, where, you know, if vitamin C were to effectively compete with a pharmaceutical and ruin that that profit, you know, you can't replace it with the very thin margins that are involved in selling vitamin C.
So, Tara, this listener is saying, who are you to argue with Linus Pauling, a two-time Nobel Prize winner?
Absolutely. He's a brilliant man. His, most of the recognition was not in, you know, this vitamin work. That was later. And, in fact, a lot of people think it, you know, damaged his reputation a bit. You know, the vitamin supplement industry is $23 billion. A lot of pharmaceutical companies sell vitamins. And I think the flaw in this argument is that we don't have a drug that is doing this. It's not as if these are competing with drugs. I guess you could make an argument that if we all get sick, we've got to get drugs to make us better. But there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of financial interest in finding something that prevents disease. And, you know, people sell vitamin C. People make money off of vitamin C. The question is this the right place to be spending your money? You know, the food industry would benefit if you shifted from vitamins to buying more fruits and vegetables. So I know there's a lot of skepticism, and I certainly understand the skepticism, but there's a lot of effort, not by the pharmaceutical industry, but by doctors and scientific researchers trying to validate the vitamin C issue, and it really has not. Vitamin C is fascinating. Cochrane Reviews just did a few years ago, you know, looked at who benefits from these megadoses of vitamin C. You know, what about the common cold, which is a lot of reason people take it, and they really found no benefit in the large study. The only place where they
before the cold hits.
It's a little complicated because they did look at it many ways, but the main finding was that there was, you know, really no evidence that if you looked at sort of all these studies that there was a benefit from taking prophylactic vitamin C. What they did find, and this is so interesting, they looked at six trials involving 642 marathon runners, skiers, and soldiers on subarctic exercises. And those people had about a 50% benefit. So in extreme situations, vitamin C may help prevent colds. But even if they looked at, well, does taking vitamin C shorten the duration of your cold? You know, they did see a small benefit, an 8% benefit. But let's talk about what that means. If you have a 72-hour cold and you take vitamin C, that comes out to about 5 hours less. Is it really worth this effort? You know, is this where we should be putting our resources and our energy? That's the question.
Dr. Deng, what about herbal supplements?
Yeah, I think herbal supplements are even more complicated because each herb contains hundreds of active compounds in it. Although we think they're natural, but the if you boil it down, it's all chemicals as well. It's just natural chemicals.
Echinacea is very popular with people as a treatment for the common cold. Does it work?
Well, that's an area still being investigated. There are several trials that didn't show the expected effect in lessening the symptoms of cold. But then there are arguments whether those trials were done appropriately. For example, did they use the right preparation? Was the dosage correct? Was the timing correct? You know, we can argue this all day long, and we're not going to go anywhere until you have a positive trial. So I think right now it's more important to do preclinical study, you know, laboratory study, to find out what exactly is the active ingredient in echinacea and in which way it may work. By knowing that, we may be able to design a better trial to see some effect. Otherwise, all these research dollars are going to waste.
We go now to Sandy from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you, Leonard. Keep up the good work. As usual, with these conversations, I'm always very confused. Number one, I'm under treatment at Sloan Kettering for prostate cancer right now, and I'm having hormone treatment for it. And I do take what I would consider, I guess, massive doses of vitamin C. My question number one is, would a 1,000 units of vitamin C strengthen the cancer within my system with having hormone treatment as it would if you're having chemotherapy? I guess Dr. Zhang would be...
Yeah, I think the short answer is I do not know for sure. Because if you're under hormonal therapies alone, the vitamin C, I don't think, will interfere with the drug alone. Mm-hmm. If you're under certain chemotherapies, there are some drugs called, for example, the alkylating agents. The vitamin C may interfere with that. For you, I think there are plenty of evidence proper diet plays a role in the prevention of prostate cancer. So I think you should focus on that. And there are some preliminary data about other nutritional supplements, for example, pomegranate extracts and lycopene and so on. There's some preliminary data suggesting they may be helpful, although the definitive answer is still being studied. But I haven't seen any strong data supporting the use of vitamin C. Uh-huh. On the other hand, if you're just taking a regular small dose, I don't think it will hurt you either.
Uh-huh. Well, I the horse, of course, was out of the barn, but I was taking lycopene for many years, and I still wound up with prostate.
Yeah. Remember, these things, if they do anything at all, it will be a reduction of risk. They will not eliminate the risk. Otherwise, they'll be too good to be true. Everyone will be taking them.
Okay.
So keep
can I throw in another quick one, Leonard?
Well, let me go to another caller, okay? Thanks for calling. Nina, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a lot of very positive experiences and proven through blood tests and through health, not using multivitamins, but by using specific supplements to control various chronic conditions. I've used supplements to control my asthma. I was on inhaled steroids for 20 years. I don't take any medicine at all anymore. I had very, very serious allergies and was on prescription medicine for allergies. I do not take any medicine for allergies anymore. My daughter developed insulin resistance from using a lot of steroid ointment for eczema that she had as a toddler and child. And by using the correct supplements, I was able to not only get rid of the eczema, but also the insulin resistance.
Dr. Deng?
Yes, sometimes you have to look at these things in its totality. I mean, don't look at the specific symptoms. First of all, I do think some of the symptoms or diseases you described may well respond to certain substances in the supplements because they're all immune-related. Basically, you probably have a very sensitive immune system, and there are herbs and supplements that may modulate that. Secondly, whether what you observed was just a coincidence or just a natural course of disease, I need to know more about that before I can say for sure. But I don't think we can discount these stories and these cases, and that's why we are always very interested in hearing them and trying to study them and to find whether we can find something useful for other people.
Tara, you told me once that you wish that these things work better, and you're always surprised when people accuse you of somehow distorting the information. If all of these things did what some people claim that they could do, if the studies suggested that they actually were working, you'd be a happy person.
Well, how fantastic would that be? I would be first in line at the health food store gobbling down these multivitamins and the supplements, and it would be a great thing. And I think the problem is that we do... You know, health is so much more complex than I think we give it. You know, the caller, you know, this is somebody who has been very empowered, taken charge of their health, really researched the health, and there's all kinds of benefits from that. Was it the supplementation? Was it just being proactive and living a healthy lifestyle? And that's what I think the science is trying to sort out, and it hasn't sorted it out yet. I don't think we have the evidence yet, but we do know that diets rich in fruits and vegetables, exercise, managing your stress, we know those things work.
My great thanks to the both of you for being on this show, Tara Parker Pope, the Well columnist at the New York Times, and Dr. Gary Deng, a researcher and physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center's Integrative Medicine Services, also available on About Herbs. Is it aboutherbs.com?
No, it's if you Google Sloan Kettering Herbs, you'll see that will be the top hit site. There are a lot of information on that, about 230 herbs and supplements, information on that.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, both of you.
Thanks,
my pleasure.
Larry.